a hunchbacked bell ringer, a beautiful street dancer, and a tormented priest. Three souls circling each other in the shadow of a cathedral that may be the most important character of all. Victor Hugo's 1831 masterpiece doesn't just tell a story, it resurrects an entire world. When he wrote it, Notre Dame Cathedral stood neglected, crumbling, threatened with demolition. His novel became its savior, sparking a preservation movement that would restore the Gothic marvel to glory. But Hugo achieved something even more remarkable. He turned architecture into literature, and literature into activism. The book reminds us that art doesn't merely reflect the world, sometimes it reshapes it. Today, as Notre Dame rises again from the ashes of the 2019 fire, Hugo's words feel more prophetic than ever. This isn't just a tale of unrequited love and medieval cruelty. It's a meditation on what we choose to preserve, what we discard, and how beauty, whether in stone or soul, survives in a world determined to crush it. Notre Dame isn't backdrop, it's breath and bone. Hugo dedicates entire chapters to its flying buttresses, gargoyles frozen mid-snarl, and rose windows casting jeweled light on stone floors. For Quasimodo, abandoned on its steps as a deformed infant, these walls become mother, father, universe. He knows every hidden passage, every crumbling cornice, every bell's distinct voice. The massive bronze bells are his only friends, their vibrations so powerful they've rendered him completely deaf, a cruel irony deepening his isolation while binding him to his stone home. Hugo presents the cathedral from every angle, street level where crowds gather, the towers where Quasimodo surveys his kingdom, the Seine where its reflection shimmers. The building embodies medieval society's collective genius, created by anonymous craftsmen whose carvings and stained glass told stories to the illiterate masses before printing presses existed. Meet Quasimodo on the wrong day, and you might mistake him for a demon. Born with a hunched back, a massive wart obscuring one eye, and twisted legs, he's abandoned at Notre Dame, where the crowd suggests burning or drowning him. Only Claude Frollo, the austere archdeacon, shows mercy, adopting him. Gratitude becomes the foundation of his existence. He worships Frollo with absolute devotion, until he must choose between his master and his conscience. Everything changes when Esmeralda shows him kindness. Sentenced to public flogging for attempting to kidnap her on Frollo's orders, Quasimodo writhes the pillory while the crowd pelts him with stones. His desperate cries for water go unanswered until Esmeralda steps forward with a flask. This single act awakens profound devotion. When he later rescues her from execution, he becomes her silent guardian within Notre Dame. The tragedy of Quasimodo's love lies in its purity. He never expects reciprocation. He leaves two vases at her window, an elegant crystal one, cracked and holding withered flowers, beside a common clay jug with fresh blooms. He sees himself as the broken vessel. When Esmeralda dies, Quasimodo vanishes. Years later, workers discover two skeletons in her tomb, one twisted and deformed, wrapped around the other. When they try to separate them, the bones crumble to dust. Esmeralda bursts into Hugo's gray medieval world like a firework, all color, movement, and light. She dances in the public square with her goat, Jolly, born French but raised by Romani, who stole her as an infant. Around her neck, she wears a small embroidered shoe, half of a pair her mother kept when gypsies left a deformed child in exchange. This amulet becomes her talisman, and she believes it will only lead her to her mother if she remains pure. Her innocence proves both virtue and fatal flaw. When Captain Phoebus rescues her from Quasimodo's kidnapping attempt, she falls hopelessly in love, blind to what readers see immediately. Phoebus is shallow, vain, already engaged, viewing her as merely another conquest. When they meet secretly, Frollo stabs Phoebus in jealous rage. Esmeralda is blamed, imprisoned, tortured, and sentenced to hang. She clings to the delusion that Phoebus will save her. Even when Frollo offers escape in exchange for submission, she refuses, choosing death over betrayal. The novel's most wrenching moment comes when she finally reunites with her birth mother, a half-mad recluse who has spent 15 years hating gypsies. Recognition comes through their matching shoes, but their joyful reunion lasts only minutes before soldiers drag Esmeralda to the gallows while her mother dies trying to hold on. Claude Frollo might be literature's most disturbing villain precisely because he begins as a hero. Orphaned young, he sacrifices his ambitions to raise his infant brother Jahan, taking holy orders to support them. His adoption of the deformed foundling Quasimodo demonstrates genuine compassion. He becomes a renowned scholar and respected archdeacon until the day he sees Esmeralda dancing in the square and everything inside him cracks. His obsession consumes him like a disease. "Before I met you, I was happy," he tells her. "I was pure, my soul was filled with limpid light." Rather than acknowledging his moral failure, he externalizes blame. It's her fault for being beautiful, the devil's fault for tempting him, fate's fault for crossing their paths. The Greek word anuk, meaning fate or necessity, appears carved in his cell wall, his meditation on the destiny he feels powerless to resist. Frollo exploits Quasimodo's devotion, using him to kidnap Esmeralda. His final offer, escape death by becoming his, represents the complete inversion of everything he once stood for. When she refuses, choosing the gallows over dishonor, his love transforms into murderous rage. He watches her hang with demonic laughter. Then, moments later, Quasimodo hurls him from Notre Dame's tower. The Greek word anathke, meaning fate or necessity, carved into Notre Dame's wall becomes Hugo's philosophical anchor. Every character struggles against invisible chains, fighting for autonomy while forces beyond their control drag them toward predetermined ends. The novel's architecture of impossible loves reveals fate's cruel design. Frollo loves Esmeralda, who despises him. Quasimodo loves Esmeralda, who fears him. Esmeralda loves Phoebus, who merely desires her. The tragic reunion between Esmeralda and her mother, after 15 years apart, connected only by a tiny preserved shoe, crystallizes this perfectly when they find each other moments before execution. Medieval Paris embodies this deterministic worldview through rigid hierarchies where individual choice means little. Yet Hugo suggests dignity lies in our response. Quasimodo protects Esmeralda against his master's commands. Esmeralda refuses Frollo even to save her life. While we cannot escape fate, we control how we meet it. Hugo didn't just write about Notre Dame, he rescued it. When his novel appeared in 1831, the cathedral stood neglected, its sculptures defaced, demolition looming. The book's popularity sparked public outcry that led to major restoration beginning in 1844. Literature literally saved stone. When fire ravaged Notre Dame in 2019, the world mourned not just a building, but a character made real through Hugo's prose. The novel's legacy extends beyond preservation. It challenged how we think about beauty. Physical deformity can mask profound worth, while conventional attractiveness often conceals cruelty. Hugo's characters have become archetypes, reinterpreted from silent films to Disney animations. Each adaptation reflects its era while maintaining core truths. Love, in its purest form, asks nothing in return. Obsession destroys what it cherishes. Outcasts often possess more humanity than celebrated citizens. In an age of constant demolition and reconstruction, Hugo's masterpiece testifies to what endures when we choose to protect it.